to another episode of This Mobile Life. I'm with a good friend of mine. He's a regular now on the podcast, Francis McCarthy. How you doing, Francis?
Yeah, good, thanks, man. How are you?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I was keen to catch up with you just anyway about the NBA Finals, because we've just seen game four, but we can cover game three too, because when the previous podcast, I think we did game one. I can't remember if we did game two as well.
Yeah, so we can talk about game three and four. It's been quite a turn of events.
Yeah, and then I wanted to talk a little bit about the other theme of the podcast is Amazon Prime and just Amazon in general, because like I've just moved to America. I've signed up to I've always been an Amazon customer, but I've just signed up to Prime and I'm using it in a different way here as well. And then we'll have a special guest, which is your partner, Helena, who actually works at Amazon as well.
Yeah, we were just chatting a bit before the podcast, and I thought, well, if we're going to talk about Amazon, yeah, my wife Helena actually works there, so she'd be a perfect person, you know, living in Seattle, sort of the home of Amazon, to actually sort of share her experiences. So that'll be cool as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, let's get into it. NBA Finals, what was your take on Game 3 and 4 and kind of where the series is at the moment?
Well, yeah, man, I thought that, before game four, I really thought that the Cavs might have given the Warriors their best swing in game three. And, you know, KD came up too big in the end, which was just so indicative of the overwhelming talent that the Warriors have on this roster. It was like, you know, Kyrie was making some amazing finishes throughout the game. LeBron was playing amazing as well. And, you know, KD comes down and seals it with that pull-up three over LeBron towards the end. So it just kind of felt to me like, you know, no matter what the Cavs did, they just didn't have enough to overcome the Warriors' juggernaut. But game four was, I think, probably the best game of the series, and definitely, you know, from a competitive standpoint, just awesome that they were able to get one and, you know, extend the series. Because now, obviously, you know, it's the 3-1 jokes start all over again. I'm sure we'll see plenty of memes in the next 24 to 48 hours trying to get the Warriors to think about that again. But, you know, it's just I think it's just awesome to see Kyrie and LeBron, you know, in particular, just performing out of their minds and just like winning against all odds. I think like if you were listening to a lot of NBA coverage, whether podcasts or SportsCenter or whatever, before game four, almost everyone was predicting that the Warriors were going to close it out. And a lot of people were predicting that it was going to be a blowout too. So I think, you know, it was just an amazing effort by the Cavs. And I think, you know, it's going to get super interesting if they're somehow able to pull off game five in Oracle. But I think it's really a case of one game at a time for them at the moment and just see if they can survive.
Yeah, it was just amazing last two games. I actually want to ask you, where did you watch the games? Were you at a bar or at home? Or?
Yeah, so we have, you know, a pretty good bar scene in Seattle, and there's actually a place called Kessler's right in Capitol Hill where I live. And it's a really sort of dedicated hardcore sports fans bar. So they have everything from, you know, a big kind of hero poster of A-Rod for the Yankees, you know, across one wall. And then they've got the old Sonic, Seattle Supersonics stuff all over the place and just sporting memorabilia. It looks like someone's kind of, I guess, like den or garage, like kind of man cave kind of place. And it's really cool because it only fits like a maximum of like if you got 70 people in there, it would be like wall to wall, just like sardines. So it's a small little bar, but the only people who go there are actual sports fans. So it gets pretty loud in there. And it's also kind of like a locals place. So that's a really fun place to watch it. So I've been catching most of the games there at Kessler's.
Cool. I had a similar experience where I watched it. So game two, I watched it at a local bar near my house. It's called the Connecticut Yankee. And I'd seen it before. I'd walked past and it said, hey, we show Warriors games. And then I looked at renting a property near there, and the real estate agent recommended this bar. He's like, they make really good food. And so I organized a bunch of friends to go there. And I rocked up an hour beforehand, and it was like fairly empty. So we were able to get like an awesome spot. And what I noticed was that this was like a sports bar very quickly, because it's actually a Boston sports bar. And yeah, so they've got like a Boston Celtics jersey on the wall. They've got like Boston Red Sox logos. They've got Boston Red Sox baseball cards as well that are framed, like really old ones from the like 1960s or something. And they've got like a New England's Patriot thing, and it's an awesome bar. And then every time something major happened, like Klay Thompson hit a three or something or some crazy dunk, the bartenders would ring this bell. It was so cool. And so I rocked up early, and because I was basically trying to mind the table, and then it started filling up, and I had another friend there, and then everyone else showed up about like an hour and a half later. But it was an awesome experience, and like everything was, it was a lot of like really passionate Warriors fans there as well, and there was like three Cavs fans in the house, including myself. So we were trying to hold it down for Cleveland, but it was a blowout by like, I think it was like, I can't remember, like 20 to 30 points, I think. Yeah, and then game three, I watched it at work. We had like a, I've just started coming known to this term, like watch party. So they had, it's showing on the two big projector screens. Mm-hmm. And then everyone at work kind of stayed after work to watch it. I think it's because people live pretty far and there's not a lot of bars around as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Silicon Valley, is like a collection of like suburbs.
Yeah.
It's not like one big city. So we watched it there, and then they ordered like buffalo wings from this place called Wingstop, and it was like amazing. I tried like about five or six different flavors of wings as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll riff on that for about in a sec. And then game four, I went to Oracle Arena to watch it. So not, it wasn't the actual game. Like, it wasn't a live game. They had a live viewing showing on the big screens, and that was an amazing experience as well.
Yeah, that's cool. So how many people do you think they had at Oracle to watch that?
I think it was like 95% full.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it was a lot cheaper. It wasn't like I've paid like 500 or 600 bucks for a ticket, because we're crazy sports fans, so we do that, right? But the watch party was like $20, so it's very affordable. And you kind of, it's like watching the game itself, because they actually have all the in-game entertainment there as well.
Yeah.
So they do like, when the players run out. So what happened was someone, not the mascots, but you know, the dancer people, they ran out and they had like a big, like Kevin Durant thing taped to their face. And so it was like almost like a giant bobblehead. And so they ran out one at a time, and it was awesome. They had like the fireworks going, and they had dancers, and they threw t-shirts into the crowd. So they got everyone like pretty pumped up, and they gave out like thunder sticks. So it was really loud. Like it was like as if you were at the actual game or in your lounge room with like 20,000 other people.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, it's so cool that they can create that kind of atmosphere for a watch party. But you know, you can imagine that if they actually had won game four, like how amazing that atmosphere would have been, like the whole celebrations and everything going on, you know. And it could happen, you know, if they happen to slip in game five but win game six, it'll be the same scene again. So yeah, it's awesome that you're there in the city where it's all going on, man. So I think, you know, on Monday night, wherever you watch it, people are going to be on the edge of their seats to kind of, I don't know what it's like downtown in San Francisco or Oakland, but I'm sure people will be like ready to pile out and celebrate if they can get it done.
Yeah, we'll go nuts. Like when I was walking towards the stadium, obviously walking there with all these Warriors fans and yelling at like, you know, 4-0, sweep, sweep, you know. I was saying to my friend, like, do you think people bring brooms to the watch party as well?
Yeah.
Because, like, you just felt like it was inevitable, like, they're going to win game four. I was chatting to a coworker at work, and we were both of the same opinion, like, Cleveland is going to, like, just come out fighting. Like it's basically for all the marbles. So, because they've had their backs against the wall. They've lost, like, twice pretty badly, and the third game was very competitive. But it was almost, like, for pride. Like, they just had to put up a great fight and try to win. Otherwise, it's over, right? So...
Yeah, I mean, you got to hand it to them. They really played with a lot of heart. Like, they could have, like, if, let's say, Steph Curry came out and hit a couple of threes in the first minute, you know, that, like, you could see the Warriors just piling it on. You know, I think every Cavs fan would have just been thinking that worst case scenario, this could go really bad and, you know, they're getting swept, right? So, like, I think for them to come out, you know, and be in, like, historically a helpless situation, because no one has ever came back from 3-0 to actually win the series. So I think, you know, people probably wouldn't have held it against them too much if they put up a little bit of a fight and then let it fall away. But they just did the exact opposite. You know, like, they came out, they looked like they believed they were going to win from the tip. Like, they came out with, like, you know, tremendous energy. They making a lot of shots. Like, Kyrie hit his first shot. J.R. Smith hit his first shot. Like, they really came in locked in and ready to play. And, you know, they really just overwhelmed the Warriors. You know, I think they had, 48 points, 49 points in the first quarter. That was just unbelievable. You know, you're looking at the score and it looks like a halftime score at quarter time. And normally that's what the Warriors are doing to the other team, and they just completely flip the script. So, you know, like a team with LeBron, you can never count them out, right? And I think, yeah, it looks like a long path at the moment, but, you know, we saw some strange things happen last year. So we'll, you know, I don't know, man. It's so hard to predict right now what's going to happen. So I guess, like, at least it's made for a more interesting series.
Yeah, I think it will be. Like, the thing is, they've won from 3-1 down before, but I think it was slightly different in that I think it was 2-1 and then 3-1. And then they won the next three.
Yeah, I think that's how it went as well. So they weren't. Yeah, that was one of the difference in the series, is that they didn't get down 3-0 last time. They actually took one of those games. So the most it could have been was 2-1. So yeah, like, it, you know, they're coming back from, they've given a bigger start basically. And, you know, there's, in a 7-game series, like, that one game makes a massive difference. It's just such a long road back. And, you know, and also you've got, obviously, the Kevin Durant factor. Like, the Warriors have more talent this year. And even, can't remember who it was, I think it might have been Richard Jefferson talking to the Cavs reporters after the game. He said that team has more talent, you know, so it's, they're not under any illusions. Like, they know the Warriors have more talent than them, so it's not about, you know, believing that they're necessarily the better team overall or on paper. It's just like trying to get one game at a time and being the better team on any given night over the next, you know, three games that are left, if they can extend the series.
Yeah, I was just going to tell you like a funny anecdote. When I was getting the train back from Oakland to San Francisco, there was a guy that got on the train with a Cavs jersey. Mm-hmm. And so everyone is just like grilling him, saying, you know, LeBron's a crybaby, because he had like a LeBron jersey on. And then someone started yelling out, "You don't believe." It was just funny. But the guy was standing up for himself. He's like, no, like, we're coming back. You know, we can still win, blah, blah, blah. And like, it was awesome. Because like, Oakland is known to have a kind of a rowdy kind of crowd. So
yeah,
it was pretty brave of him to get onto the train and just wear the jersey, because it was freezing as well. So I wasn't sure if he was making a statement or if he was just... because it was really hot inside the train as well, because he had a jacket and a jersey. So
yeah, well, I thought it was funny, like, after game three, where the Cavs played well but lost, J.R. Smith's Twitter account, he came out and said, "Cavs in seven." And and then so everyone screenshots this, you know, this tweet and starts retweeting it, and then he deletes the tweet, you know, so he must have obviously got pounded with notifications, like, he's crazy or whatever. And
well, he is crazy.
He is. And then, he sort of told the standard line that his phone had been hacked, his Twitter account had been hacked, and sort of backtracked. And then they asked him before game four, like, you know, JR, do you have any idea who hacked your Twitter account? He said, "Oh, no, I don't know. Like, I don't know who hacked it." So it was kind of like everyone knew that he probably just made that up. But I mean, like, that tweet is going to come back around if it gets to a game seven. You know, like, everyone will think, like, JR is Nostradamus.
Yeah.
I hope we see it.
Yeah. I felt that, like, in game four, like, the Cavs just kind of came out with this, like, newfound energy. Like, they just came out hard. Like, they normally, like, kind of fall behind very quickly, and then they just can't recover. And this one, they just jumped out, like, way in front, and they just kept coming at them. And like, you could tell as well, like, very energized. Like, Tristan Thompson was playing really well, just playing like a madman, like what he usually does, right? Grabs every rebound. Kyrie, and I noticed LeBron was a lot more aggressive in this game as well.
Yeah. No, he was super aggressive, man. And I think it kind of threw the Warriors off their game a little bit. Like, to see, maybe they were half expecting Cleveland to lie down after an initial fight as well. But, you know, like, if Kyrie, man, he dropped. He had 7 threes, you know, 7 of 12 from 3-point line, just like a 40 points, you know, like a 40-point performance in an elimination game where everyone was counting on him. Like, before this game, I actually said to a couple of people that for the Cavs to win, I think they needed 90 points combined between LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love, mm-hmm. and they actually got it. So Kyrie had 40, LeBron had 31, so that's 71. Then Kevin Love had 23, so that makes it 94. So they got 94 from those guys combined, mm-hmm. and, you know, that is what it took for them to win this game. So I think, man, like, you know, a lot has to go right in this matchup for the Cavs to win a game. And I think, you know, it's going to be such a tough assignment to try and get it done again in Oracle with that crowd. You know, like the Warriors will be throwing everything at it just to try and close it out. You know, like they, I think that they will, you know, they'll be super tough to beat in this next game. So yeah, man, like it's, I think again, it'll come back to LeBron, Kyrie and Love. And if they can somehow, like, you know, come out with another crazy performance to just try and match it with these guys on Golden State.
Yeah, I think the other X factor, same as in previous series, is J.R. Smith. Because I noticed when he plays well, like the rest of the team, like they win as well. So I think in the last game, he had like, can't remember how many points, he had at least 12 points. Like he was just drilling a couple of threes. And he had this crazy three where he was like at least 6 feet from like the three-point line as well.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah, I think he's shooting like around 45-50% from three over the last couple of games. And that was after the first two games of the series, he didn't shoot well at all. Like his points line for his individual points was like 6.5 and he was under that. So it's amazing as well, this phenomenon that's been observed in the NBA. In playoff series, role players tend to shoot better at home. And like it's, you know, from that's one, another example of it is JR shoots better at home. Like, and you know, I'd love to see the stats, you know, someone dig them up over the course of the year or in the playoffs, but it seems to happen on a regular basis. And I guess like it would kind of make sense because if you've got 82 games a year, they're playing 41 of them at home. So they get, you know, and they're sleeping in their own bed. They got their routine on game day. They haven't traveled as far to get there. So it makes a lot of sense that role players who, you know, who are often relied on to score these, you know, supporting points in a supporting role, like would actually shoot better at home. So you know, with that said, I think, you know, it's going to be for the Warriors, these guys, they got like, you know, Livingston, David West, and what's his name, Ian Clark, you know, these are sort of the supporting guys who they're going to look to chip in a little bit of offense around their big four. But yeah, Steph Curry as well, he didn't play very well in this game. He was 4 of 13 from the field, 2 of 9 from 3, and just like didn't look anything like, you know, that MVP level Curry that he was looking like in you know, game 2 and 3 where he was just killing them and like pulling up for his crazy off the dribble threes, just, you know, didn't look like he could be stopped. So I think when he goes back home, he'll probably have another amazing game. So it's just, you know, it doesn't get any easier for the Cavs.
You forgot to name drop the people's MVP, Zaza Pachulia.
he's probably my favorite Warrior. I think he's a cult hero, and he seemingly got away with a swing at the groin of
Iman Shumpert.
Yeah. So and that got retweeted like 1,000 times on different accounts. And
I think he had two swings actually.
Yeah, like he seems to like just, I don't know if he's got some pact with the referees or whatever, that he gets like a quota of groin punches per game that is like outside of the regular technical foul limit. But he seems to have struck a good deal. So, you know, we'll see if he can do it again. But, I think that's probably his greatest value add to the team is
the groin
just,
punch.
The groin and the entire niggling. Yeah, the niggling. Like it's kind of like the Steven Adams or the Andrew Bogut kind of role. Like I think Adams does it best actually, because I don't think he's like as dirty as in like he's never anything below the belt, but he actually just kind of gets his little hits and elbows and things in surreptitiously and also with a straight face, like in sort of true Aussie/Kiwi style. Like he's like saying like he doesn't even say what, who, me. He just like has a complete straight face, like complete poker face. And then whether it's DeMarcus Cousins or someone like Draymond or whoever, he actually gets under their skin. They're the ones who retaliate, and then they're the ones who get the foul. Like Adams has got to be the best in the league at that.
Mm-hmm.
So Zaza's not quite as subtle, but when you've got four All Stars around you, like, you know, he's got to do what he can to stay on the court.
Yeah. So I was gonna talk about was kind of two underlying themes in the game. So one you mentioned, and like the, because I was sitting with all the Warriors fans, right? And they were screaming blue murder because of they're saying the refereeing. They're like, oh, it's because of financial reasons, blah, blah, blah. Because the thing is, if they sweep the series, they actually play less games.
Yeah.
And so there's actually less, obviously, ticket revenue. So they actually lose millions.
Yeah.
And then also TV revenue goes down, sponsorship dollars, they miss out on that. The players miss out on, I think, additional bonuses per game. And also, like, for the employees of the arena, like, they work less days as well.
Yeah.
So they're saying that the NBA wants to have, like, you know, game six, game seven, etc.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's been discussed a fair bit, and I think Darren Rovell, who's the Forbes sports business reporter, he had an article in this series, and it basically said that the Warriors stand to make $11 million profit apparently from Game Five if it goes to a Game Five. So, with everything you mentioned, like, you know, tickets, merchandise sold at the door, all of that, TV advertising. So yeah, financially, kind of makes sense that they would want another game, but I think if you were to ask the players, they probably didn't want another game. So it's but you know, with the refereeing, I thought if anything the biggest controversy was Draymond seemingly picking up his second technical foul, a lot of confusion happening, then actually the ref said actually that first technical was not on Draymond for elbowing Iman Shumpert in the face, it was actually on Steve Kerr for jumping off the bench. But apparently they didn't communicate that clearly enough to the scorekeepers. So the technical, which was actually on the scorecard committed to Draymond Green, was reassessed to be on Steve Kerr only after the second technical was called on Draymond Green, which is one of the most farcical turns of events that I've personally ever seen in NBA playoffs. And it just, like, the whole Cleveland crowd thought that Draymond was out. Tyronn Lue thought he was out. I think LeBron thought he was out. And I think, you know, it was probably a good thing in the end that Cleveland won off the back of that decision, because can you imagine the uproar if Draymond happened to hit the game-winning shot with kind of one technical with an asterisk next to his name as, like, the historical footnote on that? I think that would have been a disastrous scenario. So I think, you know, it kind of all turned out in the wash, I guess. But, yeah, Draymond seems to have this special capacity to, you know, he can protest calls more, he can swear more, he can throw his arms up more, he can run down the court in a sort of demonstration against a referee's call more. And they just seem to... it's almost like they know he's going to do it. So how many technicals can they call on him? Well, really only one, because they don't want to kick him out of the game because it's going to influence the outcome of the game. So he kind of really just walks the line and gets away with, you know, probably more than anyone else. So I think, you know, that's where the Cavs probably have to try and, like, get whoever, whether it's Dante Jones or someone who plays a non-consequential role in their team, to kind of play that Steven Adams role and just get under Draymond's skin and try and make him do something stupid to get him another technical or something. Because, you know, Draymond definitely has an advantage in that respect. He kind of really gets away with a lot.
Yeah. I actually feel like sometimes he just plays a little bit reckless, like he has his arms and legs, like, flinging out all the time. I'm just going to talk a little bit briefly about the second underlying theme that I've noticed in the crowd and afterwards as well. I'm not sure if you saw me post on Facebook today about the finals. So the underlying theme was Dwayne Wade's outfit and haircut.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Yeah, pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it was funny. His wife, he's Gabrielle Union. She's like a model. She tweeted, like, yeah, Dwayne's rocking the he's a long-lost member of, like, New Edition. He's had this, like, 1980s, like, pimp, like, R&B look. He had, like, the full green, I think it was, like, velvet, like, jumpsuit.
He looked like a velvet kind of number, which is always one of my favorites, the velvet, man. That's and it's like, it's kind of that deep emerald green.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. And then he had like this, like, he's got the little afro happening with orange tips or orange dyed hair, and then he had the glasses on and open jacket look with like two chains. It was just hilarious.
You know, actually he looked like he was in the Miami crowd. That's more of a Miami look, I feel.
Yeah, I think the thing I posted on Facebook was because he had a picture next to Stephen A and also next to Shaq, and Shaq had this other like ridiculous suit outfit as well. And the caption that I posted was a screenshot of someone else who said, "When you unlock all the outfits in GTA."
So, yeah, right. Because
he looked like he just walked out of the GTA set. So yeah, it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's change topics and let's talk about something that I've discovered recently, is Amazon Prime, and just using Amazon in general in the US. You've obviously got a very unique position because you're in Seattle. You've been using Amazon, I assume, for the last 2 years or so as well in the US, yeah. And also because your partner works for Amazon as well.
Yeah, so she's been there for probably about 9 months or so. And so, yeah, I'd say like that's one of the first things that you notice when if anyone's ever kind of spent time in Seattle or lived in Seattle is how much of a cultural influence Amazon as a company in particular has over the entire city. It's like nothing that I've ever really seen before. So, you know, if you live in Sydney, for example, where we live prior to moving here, I wouldn't say that any one company has like a cultural impact, like a primary cultural impact on the whole city. But people talk about Amazon here like on a daily basis, whether they work at Amazon or not. And I think, you know, one figure I heard was that in the central campus here, and Helena probably has a much better idea of this, but I think they employ something like 50,000 people just in kind of downtown Seattle. Like it's a huge volume of people. And so when you're walking around and talking to people and, you know, seeing people in cafes and stuff like that, it's almost a running joke where like they hear, say, your Australian accent and they say, oh yeah, so, you know, are you on holiday? Do you work here? Oh yeah, I moved out here. Okay, cool. Do you work for Amazon then? You know, like it's almost assumed. And you're actually kind of in the minority if you didn't get moved out here by Amazon. And, you know, it's pretty cool because like Seattle is actually where the headquarters of Microsoft is as well. So it's kind of the baton has kind of been passed in a way from Microsoft to Amazon. And Amazon just continues to grow at absolutely astounding rates. So they announced earlier this year that they plan to hire another, I think it was 120,000 full-time staff members.
Wow.
And that was like in the next 12 months, like just a crazy, crazy amount of people that they're going to hire. And these are in full-time roles. Like Amazon is just, you know, I was looking at their stock price earlier, and if you just like let's say you take the last few years as a scale, so their stock was at $290 in January 2015, and then it was at
it's like 800 or something now, or maybe 850.
So then, you know, January 2016 587, and then now June 2nd it was at $1,000, you know.
That's
so
insane.
So it's amazing. It's fair to say that, yeah, like people here like talk about Amazon a lot. A lot of people work at Amazon, and, you know, it's just an incredible time to be living in Seattle, actually, because, you know, they're even changing the face of like the downtown area with the buildings that they're building. They've got these sort of orbs or kind of spheres, they call them, yeah, that are in downtown that have been sort of planning for like 5 or 6 years, I think, and now they're actually coming to fruition and people are starting to move into the building next to it, and they're going to be in that building soon. So all of these things that Jeff Bezos has had sort of the vision to think about for many years now, like, you know, dating back what, like I think 15 years or so, 1997, so, well, actually, yeah, 20 years. Okay. Oh yeah, so this is when the stock started. So that's 20 years when the stock was IPO'd, and then another 3 years. So what's that, 23 years? That's amazing, right? So, and just, you know, to think about where, and this is kind of the contrast for kind of the Australian audience to the US audience, is I think a lot of people that, you know, that we talk to when we say, oh yeah, Helene actually works at Amazon, they think of it as that book company, you know, isn't that where you buy books? And obviously, that's kind of where it all started, but now they're into so many different industries and doing extraordinarily well in them, you know, whether it's, you know, just e-commerce in general. They have, you know, you probably know the figures better than me in terms of their overall share of e-commerce, which is just absolutely insane in all these different categories. Plus, they've got Amazon Video, which is actually a Netflix competitor. And a lot of, as you mentioned, Amazon Prime, a lot of Amazon Prime customers who actually get Amazon Video for free along with their Prime subscription don't even know that they get Amazon Video for free. You know, that's how much they've invested in this product. But like, there's even though it's been a successful product and they've actually been winning things like Emmys for the TV shows that they've been producing, they still haven't quite reached that level of market awareness in terms of a consumer level that everyone knows that Amazon Video is actually an option and a competitor to Netflix, you know. So a lot of the things they're doing are really, they're doing well and they're kind of only just scratching the surface. So it's really, you know, they're one of the more impressive companies that I've seen. It's kind of cool to just see it all up close in the city where they're based. Yeah, so it's, yeah, man, they're an absolute phenomenon. So it's been an interesting thing to kind of keep tabs on while we've been living here.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, like, say, back home, you might have, like, a country town or some, like, mining town, and, like, the mining company employs, like, everyone, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then that's the impression I get from your description.
Yeah, it's very much like that. You know, there's Seattle has one of the highest rates of urban construction in the entire USA. Like, we walk down to South Lake Union, which is kind of the new downtown, and that's Amazon HQ. They own multiple buildings, like literally, I think, dozens of buildings they own downtown in South Lake Union. And there are office buildings being built kind of by Amazon, but also there are a whole ton of apartment buildings just looks like a new one goes up every week kind of thing. It's just so crazy how much construction's going on around here. So they're having, you know, a massive impact, obviously, on the people that are kind of flocking to the city, like by the thousands, and also on, you know, on rents and on apartment availability and all these kind of, you know, kind of economic and lifestyle factors that go along with like a historical growth rate all based in one downtown area. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it kind of also reminds me of because I work in Mountain View, and there's a lot of people that work for Google in Mountain View. And I noticed that they also do things like they have like these like free buses. I think it's for like the public. So it's like a Google sponsored bus that drives, I think, residents around. It's kind of like in back home in Sydney, how like Star City, they sponsor a bus that goes from like certain places to Star City.
So I guess Amazon has those buses too. So it's the major difference between that and Star City is, you know, if you're on an Amazon bus, you're making money, and if you're on a Star City bus, you're losing money.
Yeah, that's true. So let's talk a little bit about Amazon Prime, because I've just discovered it in the US. I've had it for a month. I'm on the trial membership. I just upgraded to like the full membership. So what I noticed is that like you get stuff delivered like a lot faster. So some stuff I was surprised if it has a little Prime symbol next to it, you get it like same day or like the next day. Sometimes what I also noticed as well, like that's not always the case. Sometimes it's out of stock and it might take like 3 to 5 days to reach you. But otherwise it gets there much faster, but also it's like free as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember I was talking to a buddy of mine years ago, like, you know, probably like 5 years ago in Sydney, and he reads a lot of books, and we kind of were throwing each other some book recommendations, and he used to talk about how he'd order off Amazon, and because it's international shipping a lot of the time, like a lot of the books that we're reading are kind of made in the US and shipped to Australia, and so he would always do a bulk order, like he'd order like 10 books at a time. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was primarily to save on shipping, because if you bought a certain amount, say it was like over $100 or something, then they would cap the amount of shipping that they would charge you. So instead of charging, say, like, you know, $10 per book, it was capped out at, say, like $30 or $40 or something for the shipment of all the books at the same time. And so I always thought that was interesting, but you were still getting the books at such a kind of a low price overall that you would pay for the shipping because you're like, well, you know, it's going to get delivered to my place in, say, like 2 weeks, like 10 to 14 days delivery from the US. And you're like, well, I'll just order it now. I'll get it in 14 days. And I'm probably going to save money on buying all these books down at, you know, say like a Dimmicks at the time or a Borders at the time or whatever. But now, you know, if you live in a place that supports Amazon Prime, you pay your whatever it is, $90 a year, and all shipping's free. Like as a 2 day standard is free shipping with Amazon Prime. And if it's one of these, like you say, like a product that's sort of been highlighted by Prime as a Prime product or a preferential product, they actually give you expedited shipping for free as well. So it's almost like all these little bonuses that you get as a Prime member, and it's just like it's amazing how much it how convenient this entire service is.
Yeah, I've actually just been ordering a lot of stuff on there. I also had like a voucher that my work gave me as well, so I've been using it for that. But what I noticed is that, like, as soon as you order it, and, like, the thing is, it could be from different vendors, and then you just get it straight away. Like, it just ship, like, they don't ship everything together necessarily, even though you might order it together. So you might get, like, a couple of items bundled together, and then there's one other item because it might be out of stock or from somewhere else. And what I noticed as well is that, like, everyone's ordering from Amazon, and they're probably using Prime as well. There's lots of packages, like, flowing, like, logistically, like, to workplaces, to houses and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this today, like, there's actually a lot of cardboard boxes that are, like, shipped, and all the packaging as well. And it's a recyclable, but, like, there must be also an additional strain on the environment as well, because of not just the environment, but also logistically, like, the miles it takes to deliver something as well.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the logistics that Amazon has set up is, you know, is one of the most impressive things that they have done. Like, if you look at the range of products that are available on Amazon, you can buy anything on there. Like, literally almost anything, you can buy it on there. Like, and that's, it's almost like, I'll give you an example. Like, I've been playing basketball again for the last 6 months or so, like the pickup games that they have in Seattle.
Don't call it a comeback.
Yeah, that's it, man. Like, you know, I think I was going to say if JR didn't start hitting his shots, I was available for a short-term contract, you know. So, but I realized that I didn't own a basketball, and it was the craziest thing because I obviously love basketball, and but for a few years I just haven't owned an actual basketball in my place. And because of Amazon, I didn't even think about, like, going downtown and going to the, you know, equivalent of a Rebel Sport.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even know what the store is called here, to be honest with you. So I just went on Amazon, did a search for basketballs, and, you know, anyone who plays basketball can recognize what's a good one and what's not a good one. So I just picked one that I liked that was indoor, outdoor play, Spalding, NBA logo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 2 days later, it shows up in a box on my doorstep. As reliable as anything, you know. So it's kind of everyone here's, like, you know, go-to place, and people just have it open in their browser and just go, oh yeah, I need that, and
mm-hmm.
I need these things for my pantry, and I need this product, or it's recommending this product, so I'm just going to buy it. It's just the most convenient thing. But if anyone's interested in the logistics side of Amazon and actually the origin story of how Jeff Bezos set up the company and its evolution and the IPO and all of these kind of business aspects of it. There's a book called The Everything Store, and it's actually the story of Amazon. So I bought that, I think, early this year and read it, and it's a really good read. So it's by a guy called Brad Stone. You know, if you order it on Prime, it'll be at your house in 2 days. And but you know, if you order it on Kindle, another Amazon product, it'll be there instantly, right? So so it's so fascinating to read, like, how it all came together. And even just the thinking that went into everything around the logistics, as you're saying, like, it is an absolutely mind-boggling operation that they're running to be able to ship all of these different products in so many different verticals to so many random locations, you know, around the US and internationally. It's really pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say as well, like, what I've started doing is I use the Amazon mobile app as well. It's great because you get, like, push notifications when things, like, happen. Like, say they start moving something or it's arrived. And then the other thing I've just started doing is just ordering on the app. So I might be, like, because in San Francisco, right, you go to any, like, cafe or bar, like, or just anywhere that's, like, usually, like, long lines. So what I do, I pull out my mobile phone, you know, I might use Facebook or Snapchat or whatever. Or if I need something, I just order something from the Amazon mobile app. So it's quite addictive as well.
Yeah, man, and I think, you know, particularly, you know, yourself, like, working in the mobile space, I think they would, and, you know, they do a lot of work, I know, to try and hire really good people to build their products. So I think, you know, that would probably offer a lot of insights for people to dig into in terms of their design and their customer experience, you know, in terms of the mobile app.
The interesting thing is Amazon didn't have a mobile app until 2010. And that's, like, fairly late as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, it's actually good. Like, it's functional. Like, you can order stuff and you get push notifications as well. So, it's just very handy. And I've also been looking into, like, the e-commerce market in general. Right now, about 45% of e-commerce transactions are done on mobile, and it's increasing exponentially. And the other thing is desktop, it's flat, as in, like, it's growing only a little bit. So most of the stuff that people are buying now is going more and more on mobile as well.
Yeah, Yeah, it's amazing, man, the impact of mobile, and it's, you know, it's, as you mentioned, it's only increasing. You know, my observation of Amazon from a user experience perspective is it actually reminded me of your post on jobs to be done, because the thing about Amazon is it's just pure utility, you know, so you add to cart, you get, you know, you select your shipping address, you select your payment method, and then you pay, and it sends you a confirmation email. And the thing is, like, even though that is like a basic e-commerce process, the way that they have it set up on the site is just so straightforward that pretty much anyone could do it, you know, like, and you're thinking about people of different ages, of different technical capabilities, and they have customers of all shapes and sizes, of course. And, you know, that's one thing that's always struck me about Amazon is not necessarily always the sexiest user experience, but it's just optimized for functionality.
Yeah, something I've noticed recently as well, two things. When I was ordering like some like kind of like cleaning stuff for my house. So I ordered it and I was using Amazon Prime, and it said, hey, this is part of Amazon Prime Pantry. Mm-hmm. And then it was a cost for shipping it. I think it was like $5.99 or something. And I'm like, well, it doesn't make sense to me to pay that because the item itself is worth like $5. But it says, hey, you can add another 4 items from the pantry and then you'll get it free. And I'm like, well, that's a pretty good upsell. So you're trying to like find stuff to like put it to your box and get it for free. So I ended up buying other cleaning equipment, which I needed. But like it was just a very interesting upsell that they did to me to get free delivery.
Yeah, I actually know a guy who works specifically for Prime Pantry, and he was kind of running me through how it actually works. And it's pretty amazing, man. Like they just, you know, obviously Jeff Bezos' vision was to capture like a percentage of the global e-commerce market, and it is really incredible how far they've got with it so far. So yeah, it's really all pervasive. It's pretty awesome.
And then I was just going to mention one thing. It's like you touched on this as well. Like with your Prime membership, you don't just get like fast shipping and free shipping. It comes with a range of other stuff. So you mentioned like Amazon Video. Like I discovered that and I'm like, oh, I've never used this before. Like I'd heard of Prime Video, but I never used it. And then someone else was telling me, hey, they've got pretty good content on there. Like they can compete against Netflix in terms of content. Yeah. Not many people know about it. The other thing is you get it for free. So I pay like, I think it's like say $10 a month for Netflix, but I get it for free with Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So and they got more content apparently as well, but I haven't really delved into it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like if you, let's say you were a relatively casual, you know, consumer of video content, like Netflix style on-demand content, you could conceivably drop your Netflix subscription and just go with Amazon, because even though Netflix obviously has its own original content like House of Cards, Master of None, you know, these kind of, it's exclusive to Netflix. Like if you're not too worried about that and you just want stuff that's on there, like stuff to watch, TV and video, they've got a lot. You know, so, you know, if you want certain shows, then yeah, you're probably already subscribing to multiple things, but they're really making a big play on video. But yeah, the other thing that they announced in regards to that is, Tim Cook at the latest WWDC keynote, he actually announced that Apple TV will be bringing on board Amazon Prime as an Apple TV app later this year, which is kind of really big news because a lot of people, you know, use, say, Netflix through Apple TV. It's kind of like a very primary kind of use case is, you know, you've got Apple TV and you put Netflix on it and you watch Netflix through there. So if you think about it from a competitive standpoint, Netflix kind of was owning that Apple TV user space. Mm-hmm. And now Amazon Prime, I'm sure they'll get, you know, some kind of placement or promotion in the Apple TV, either App Store or whatever to promote, you know, they'll do their own promotion to say, hey, you can actually get the Apple TV app now. So the awareness of Amazon Video as a product is going to increase, you know, exponentially just because it's available and it will be available later this year on Apple TV.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just like one thing, right? I've also noticed that with your Prime membership, you even get more stuff. So the other thing I've noticed is that you also get, I think it's like Amazon Music, you get photo storage, Kindle books as well. I get like a notification every time there's like a new Kindle book available for free, Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. there's a whole range of things. It was kind of like a random collection of stuff, but just awesome bonuses. When the main thing I got it for was just the free and fast shipping.
Yeah, and that's just like, you know, they've just done such an amazing job of like adding these kind of almost hidden, you know, benefits to it. But now, like as a user, like how much more locked in are you now that you've discovered that you've got, you actually get video, you get music, you get Kindle stuff just for having your Prime? Like, why would you ever discontinue Prime now?
Yeah, that's why I signed up, right?
Yeah.
So let's take a brief break, because we want to bring on Helena to discuss, like, what's it like working at Amazon?
Yeah, absolutely, man. We'll get it lined up.
All right, awesome. Hey, Helena, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. How are you, man?
Yeah, great. So you've probably heard in the background, we've been chatting a lot about Amazon. And we thought we'd just bring you on just to hear, like, what's it like working at Amazon? I understand you've been there for, like, 9 months now.
Yeah, so I've been there a little while, but I think that, I can speak about my experience, but also it really depends on your team.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about Amazon's employee base, which, as Frances mentioned, is huge in Seattle, but is also big worldwide, it really encompasses everyone from working in the fulfillment centers, so packing and shipping your orders, placing labels on boxes, all the way through to corporate offices all around America and the world. So there's a diverse range of people on staff and also a diverse range of experiences, diverse managers. So I can say, you know, I can talk about my team. It's been really great, a really inclusive environment, you know, flexible workplace. And I would say that our staff worldwide do reflect our consumers worldwide. So that's pretty important. One of the main tenets of being at Amazon is we have leadership principles. And one of them, the first and most important, is customer obsession. So in order to really understand the customer, you know, we've got staff like really get inside their heads, because we are that people, as Frances said. You know, consumer base, you've got people of varying age and technology experience, and that's also on staff as well.
Yeah. I'm also curious as well, like, as a consumer of Amazon, like, how has that sort of changed your life and like your day-to-day?
So as Frances mentioned, once you've got a Prime membership, it becomes your first port of call. It's the free shipping, and that's a major difference. And as Amazon expands into Australia, that will be one of the key things, because we were used to paying so much for any kind of shipping, even if it was in Sydney from Sydney. You know, you'd still be paying a lot of shipping. And one major thing that Amazon has done has cut down on shipping costs and packaging. It's been interesting. Sometimes we'll place different orders from different companies on Amazon, maybe in one sitting, say we need to buy a few things for the baby, and they'll come shipped in the same box.
Yeah.
You know, better for the environment, better, you know, even in terms of fuel used to ship, and it all arrives at the same time. You open a box and there's five gifts inside instead of one.
Yeah. The other thing is, for me, I was just saying that, like, I've started ordering stuff on a regular basis now for Amazon. In fact, just before this call, I got something, like a notification saying, hey, your thing is shipped. And then I just had another thing arrive today as well. It's just really handy to have.
Oh, it's good. It's great. The only risk, and Frances and I have discussed this at other times, is that if you never want to see anybody, you can do that now. Whereas before, you know, or even in places where Prime isn't as readily available, something forces you out of the house. You know, eventually you're going to need food. But now Amazon Pantry, that comes to you. Amazon Restaurants, that comes to you.
Yeah. Do you ever have this dilemma? I have this as well. Like, you go into a store and you're like, should I buy this? I have to take it home and it'll probably cost more. Or should I just get it from Amazon? And then I think in my head, I also want to support like the local stores and producers as well.
Yeah. It is actually a real question. And there was recently an article on The Hustle which slammed Amazon for its free banana stand. So we have a free banana stand, two free banana stands in South Lake Union where any member of the public can go and pick up any number of bananas.
That's commonly awesome.
One. Our daughter likes bananas. Sometimes they take more than one. But the article basically said local businesses are no longer selling bananas. Was why would you buy a banana at Starbucks for a dollar when you could get one for free? But on the flip side of that, Matt, Amazon Marketplace, so that's the flip side of, so you're a retail consumer, and in the retail space, there's also sellers. So a small business, you or I who make handmade pillowcases, can put them up as a seller on Amazon. So you, when you look on Amazon, you're not seeing things that are only made by the Walmarts of the world. You're also seeing, not necessarily Etsy style, but small businesses actually being sold and fulfilled and have their goods held in Amazon warehouses so they don't have to pay for storage, and are fulfilled by Amazon so they don't have to worry about transport or shipping costs. So yeah. You can be supporting small businesses by shopping on Amazon.
Yeah, because it gives them like a distribution channel as well, and they Correct. Take care of a range of stuff. So it's like maybe they have some impact on a certain way things are done by small businesses, but then it's also enabled them to do other things, right? Like they can reach people worldwide now. They've now got all this backend infrastructure that Amazon provides.
That's true. And AWS is Amazon Web Services is also a huge cloud services provider, which I think has been, I mean, ironically, a little under the radar until the outage on the East Coast a little while ago, which then brought up how many everyday providers use AWS, everyone from Netflix, you know, on down, where the services have been so reliable for so long. But this hiccup did actually bring out into the open how much it's used.
Yeah,
and how widely it's
I kind of noticed taken. It, like, when, like, multiple services are down, you're like, oh, maybe something's happened with Amazon. But it affects, like all these major internet services. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I've noticed that too. Yeah. Actually, I was curious as well, like, what's the working culture like? Like, what kind of hours do you, like, do and, like, what's
it
like?
And how are they configured?
Yeah, like, I'm just curious.
Well, so it's a 40-hour week. Which is a step up from the 35-hour week I was enjoying in Australia. But you know what? Sacrifices have to be made. So it's roughly 8 till 5, but definitely in my team, there's not a culture, again, I'm speaking to my team, of micromanagement. Like my direct manager would probably not have any idea what time I get in or leave in the day. There's a sense of trust. You know, if there's any question of performance, then I'm sure he'd step in. But in the meantime, it's not a culture where he's got a line of sight for me and my colleagues at our desks and he's wondering what we're up to. And if one of us dares open up a page that isn't an Amazon sanctioned page, you know, there's none of that. So I would say that it's a pretty relaxed culture and that there's a lot of trust.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other leadership principles that we work on is hire and develop the best.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't trust your employees, why did you hire them? If you don't trust them to have their work done in that week, however they configure it, then you should question why that person's on your team.
Yeah.
So it's I'd say, Matt, that it's a pretty flexible work environment. So, yep, 40-hour week. And definitely some, you know, sometimes different peak seasons, people are putting in the hard yards and working a lot more hours than that. But at other times, like summer, it's a bit more of a relaxed time. Sometimes the office is basically dead by 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Seattle, we have to appreciate every ounce of sunshine we get. So
something I was curious as well, like, have you ever seen or met Jeff Bezos?
No, because I was out on maternity leave for our all hands, which is where he gives the talk. But he actually works in a building a couple of hundred meters from me.
Yeah.
But again, so do a couple of other thousand bald guys, you know, of his height and build. So I couldn't definitely say I've never met him, Matt, but I could, you know. It hasn't been official, let's just say that.
Yeah. Actually, I was very curious. You mentioned all hands. So I work at Atlassian. They have an all hands once a week.
Oh, wow.
And so it used to be once a month. And then everyone used to get into this like big auditorium in Sydney and they would broadcast it. But now because the company's become so big and like it's just harder for the founders of the company to like distribute their message internally. So what they've done now is they have this thing like once a week and it's a broadcast online. So you can still watch it if you're in Sydney, but they also will like go around the grounds like, hey, like let's throw it to like Amsterdam or like US, et cetera.
Mm.
So that's my, like, it's kind of weird, but that's how I've seen our all hands develop. And also like you're in all these like breakout rooms and lunch rooms and it's like on TV screen, you can see the founders of the company and they talk about like the vision and the roadmap and like, you know, certain projects.
Mm. What,
I was just curious, like have you been to any of the all hands for Amazon and what are they like, if you can talk about them?
I've been to some smaller all hands, so not for the global company because that is less regular and the last time I was out of the office. So I've been to some smaller all hands and they're very celebratory.
Mm-hmm.
I would use that term. So each organization has its own all hands at various intervals and then, you know, on down. Yeah, I'd say they're celebratory, but also there's a lot of soliciting for input beforehand. So it is not it's a dialogue more than a one-way conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the approach of the all hands.
Yeah. So we have like all hands at multiple levels. So like
yes,
each product team would have like an all hands We also have one for different streams. So everyone in mobile, there's like a town hall. We changed the name recently because we acquired a company called Trello, and then they had a term called town hall. So we changed it to that to be flexible as well and to adopt some of their culture. And then there's like an engineering all hands, and there's like, yeah, several other ones. There's also one for my office in Mountain View as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like it's a quite, well, for me, I haven't seen that type of stuff before, but it seems more common in like tech companies to do that, or especially larger ones too.
Yeah, it does. I mean, they're logistically expensive. Something that, you know, has only really been called to my attention at Amazon is the expense of meetings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you and I say we're earning $10 an hour and our colleague is working earning $5 an hour, all of a sudden an hour meeting is $25 for the company.
Mm-hmm.
So we're thinking, are we going to max out? What are we going to discuss that actually is going to make this worth it? You know, at previous workplaces, you know, there's a little, I mean, it's also the Australian culture to faff around a little more and have a little more chit chat. And then 20 minutes in, someone might go, okay, so what are we here to discuss? Whereas at Amazon, there's more of a culture of thinking people's time is valuable, not only to themselves and to the work they have to do, but to the company. So if I'm calling a meeting, I'm making sure I'm getting the most bang for my buck and that we're addressing what we want to do. And, you know, definitely when I first came, I'd be like, I'd come home and say to Francis, these people are so rude. They have not even asked me how my weekend was, you know, how dare they just open a meeting with quick question. You know, it's just a different way of doing things, but it stems from that understanding of people's time.
Mm-hmm.
So a different management of time. And I'm not sure if that's the same for you, Matt, at Atlassian.
I kind of noticed that when I got to the US office as well, like, because I'm kind of have a similar background to you, you know, worked in Australia. And yeah, you do have a bit of casual conversation first. And I've noticed in some of the meetings with other people running them, like, there isn't that. but I quite enjoy it. Like, as in, I enjoy the chit chat just to get to know people as well and what they've been up to. The other thing I've read somewhere, I think it's a Jeff Bezos principle or thing that he does. He says optimal team size should be based on like how many people you can feed like two pizzas. So I'm not sure how many people can eat a pizza, but I'm guessing it's like between 2 to 4 people each pizza. So I'm guessing maximum team size is between like 4 to 8 or maybe 4 to 6.
Depending on how hungry the people are.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard of that principle. I would also say that that Amazon is a company that moves very fast and it's very agile. So there are often quick changes, you know, in different businesses. So you might think a product's going ahead, so you might build up your team. There's a pivot change in the business, that product's no longer going ahead and those people might move to different teams. So you could go from saying we need 8 engineers on this to, you know, a month or two later, 4 of them have had, you know, found other opportunities within Amazon, you know, you've assisted in that and that your pared down team is working on a different project even. So I think it's pretty agile and that team size can change quite quickly. And sometimes they're just really large pizzas. I mean, this is America and something size.
Yeah, they got some big pizzas over here.
Yeah.
The other, like, I've got like one last question. I'm super interested. As an Amazon employee, do you get like staff discounts?
Yes, we do. Francis is smiling and nodding. Yes, we do. Yeah. It's not bad.
Yeah. Like, what kind of discount do you get? Is it like you get like some like super prime or like is it a percentage, like some kind of discount code
it's
or something?
Just a percentage of, yeah, you get a discount code and you get a percentage of your yearly purchases at Amazon. And cool. Look, I've got to say, I hate to say it, it does go pretty fast. Because now we live in Seattle and everything's so accessible. Yeah, but that's one great reason to work at Amazon.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. I might have a follow-up question if it's all right. What kind of like perks do you get working at Amazon?
Like products?
Not necessarily products, but like employee benefits. Because I can talk a little bit about Atlassian, so the perks that I get, because we didn't get these back home. So I think they're called employee benefits.
Yeah.
So I get like a commuter benefit. It's like $42 a month for like transportation.
Mm-hmm.
I also get, because I've been looking for a gym. So you get like $600 a year. It's for like gym membership. And I think there was one other thing you get. I think it's like some kind of superannuation thing, like for your 401k.
Oh, your 401k.
Yeah. So you get like
matching, employee matching.
Yeah. So they'll match you up to 4% as well.
Mm.
So I was just curious, like what kind of benefits do you get working at Amazon?
Of course, it's a different setup in the States. Like when I was at Microsoft, there was a free drinks, two free drinks, kids, one owned by Pepsi, one owned by Coke. And you could go to them as many times as you wanted.
Yeah.
Any time of the day. There was no policing on the free fridge policy. But Amazon's a little different. So, yep, 401k, obviously health, dental, vision benefits. One main thing that is part of Amazon's culture, and also it has been criticized for its slowness in this. So, for example, different tech companies have different parental leave or maternity leave benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But something to remember about Amazon is that its benefits are across every permanent employee. So, you know, Atlassian doesn't think about a fulfillment center, you know, in the middle of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're not thinking about people who are in different ranges and positions of such a global scale. So everything like from maternity leave, which has been, you know, as I mentioned, a huge, huge part of my journey coming into Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
They hired me when I was 7.5 months pregnant. So it wasn't a secret that I was expecting a baby very soon. And my hiring panel took a risk and it paid off. And that's part of, long-term thinking. Yes, it'd lose me in the short term for a couple of months, but then coming back, was I still qualified and have the skills to do a fantastic job? So maternity benefits, parental leave benefits, six weeks for fathers, and then 6 weeks, if you've been there for a year, 6 weeks for mothers, plus an extra 10 weeks of maternity leave, plus 4 weeks before the baby comes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty big deal, particularly for America. In Australia, that doesn't seem so great, but here it's very revolutionary. What are the benefits do you pick up? Oh, yeah, we do get commuter benefits, phone benefits. So they give us an Orca card, so an unlimited public transport card, which you can use as much as you like. And, oh, yeah, one of the biggest perks, I would say, is being part of beta testing.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, this isn't a secret product, is Amazon Go. Have you heard of that, Matt?
Is it like the supermarket where you can like buy stuff and just walk out?
Perfect. Yeah, so there are no queues. You scan in. They know who you are. You walk around to a shelf. You put things in a bag and you walk right out. There's no queues. There's no paying for things. It comes straight off your Amazon account.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So, for example, that's not open to the public yet.
Yeah, I've read articles about it. I think I've seen like a video, like a demo, but I just assumed that they'd have them like either in Seattle or San Francisco, but I've just never got around to checking them out.
Well, if you come north to visit us, I can take one guest.
Awesome. yeah, I'm actually thinking of going to Seattle. I'm going to Portland.
In
a couple of months. And I'm thinking of going to Seattle to watch like a Seahawks game, or they're also playing in San Francisco as well. So I'm thinking of going to Seattle. So I might take you up on that offer.
Well, we might come down to you first. We're heading down for 4th of July weekend.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. So, yeah. It would be great to catch up.
We could do an in-person pod, Matt. That would be something
we
haven't done since Sydney last time.
Yeah, we've done 2 in-person. So, yeah, we could definitely do that.
Mm.
Cool. Well, yeah, just wanted to thank you both for your time. Really appreciate it. And, yeah. All right, I'll see you both later.
Thank you, Matt.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, bye.